Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
And welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore and the games of Blizzard Entertainment. I'm Anne Stickney, one of several lore-obsessed people over on Blizzard Watch, and I've got both my wonderful co-hosts with me today. First up, got Joe Perez. Hey, Joe, how's it going?
Hello. It's going okay. I'm.
You're doing the same hello. When I did the hello this time, I'm like, I sound like Mrs. Doubtfire.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with that. That's a classic for
me. I didn't mean to do it that way. It just came out that way. Anyway.
Yes, I'm doing great. I'm planning new painting projects, and I've actually recently opened up small commissions again. So,
awesome.
Doing some fun stuff.
So you're just painting like miniature figures, that kind of thing?
It is. Fun thing that I'm doing, I was talking with Liz about this before.
Uh-huh.
There's going to be some off topics on the site coming from me regarding tabletop games, minis, and stuff like that.
Cool. I wonder if you'll get any of the Critical Role figures to paint, because that would be cool.
That would be pretty cool.
Yeah. I'm like, ooh, my like fascinations, they're crossing here. Anyway, speaking of cross, why? This is the most awkward introduction in a long time. I'm very sorry. Anyway, our other lore expert, Matt Rossi. Hey, Rossi, how's it going?
Oh.
He left.
He's gone.
Uh-oh. Hi.
Hi.
Sorry. Things just went dead.
Oh, okay.
So if I wasn't speaking for a long time and you did an intro, I apologize.
It was really funny. I just did the most awkward intro ever where I accidentally called you cross and then I said it's Matt Rossi and then you dropped out of the channel.
Okay, that wasn't me saying F this and leaving. That was just my thing messing up. Sorry if you thought I'd thrown a fit.
No, it was perfect timing because we were both like, did we just offend Rossi? Anyway, how are you doing, Rossi?
I am okay.
I am not cutting any of this conversation. This is the best.
So if people want to understand that, there you go. I'm just sad that I didn't get to do my Mrs. Doubtfire because I didn't get to. So.
Well, hey, there we go.
You know what's really weird is you have to think, I know we're doing a lore show here, but I have to bring this up before we go on. Sure. Mrs. Doubtfire is just Julia Child.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
It's his impression of Julia Child.
Yeah, that's all it is. Because every time I would watch a Julia Child episode, it would always be, hello! And then, you know, you did the thing about the stuff.
Now, the accent was different, but the hello, yes, that was very much Julia Child.
Yeah, the hello was just Julia Child, yeah. But, okay, now we can talk about Warcraft lore, I guess.
Okay, yes. Speaking of which, you guys, we're doing a weekly show now, which is really great and everything. And you remember how last week we were saying, gosh, we could really use some emails because there's probably not going to be much to talk about until BlizzCon hits. Yeah, that did not happen. Apparently, Ian Hazzacostas heard us and said, hold my beer, or something along those lines, because this week we were treated to the announcement of the 8.3 PTR and the release of the 8.3 PTR. And there's a lot on there. So we're going to be talking about the 8.3 PTR this week. There are a couple things I want you to keep in mind. Obviously, this is going to be a spoiler-laden episode, so if you're not interested in hearing about what's on 8.3 and you want to keep it a surprise, go ahead and just turn the show off now. It's fine. We'll be here later. If you decide you want to come back and listen to it at a later date, you can totally do that. Or if you know, you just want to skip this one, that's also fine. We're not going to hold it against you. The other thing to note is that obviously this is conversations about stuff that's on the PTR. And the stuff that's on the PTR, sometimes it makes it to live servers, sometimes it does not. So keep that in mind as we're talking about all of this information. Ready? Good. Go. You got 2 seconds to skedaddle, folks. Okay, let's talk 8.3, because, wow. First off, we're going to Nyalotha, and how long ago did I call this?
You and Joe both called this. Yeah, you guys were both on board. Yeah. But,
like, before the Battle for dropped. When Battle for Azeroth came out, like...
Yeah, I mean, I think you both at one point said that it was going to be the... effectively the Argus of this expansion.
Right.
Yep.
At different times. I am the one who held out for it being something else.
Okay.
I thought the stuff we got in 8.25 would be 8.3.
Can I say first up before we jump into the whole story aspect of things, if you have not seen the images from the raid, from the Nyalotha raid, I want you to look at those, and then I want you to look at the illustration of the Black Empire from Chronicle, because the raid design team brought that image to life, and it's the most astonishing, beautiful, amazing thing I have ever seen. Yeah, and I'm looking forward to going there. So, obviously, what's going on here is, you know, it's fallout from the end of the current raid. And, Joe, do you want to give us a summary of what happens at the end of the raid?
Sure. So, when you finally...
This is Ashara's Eternal Palace, by the way, guys.
Correct. At the end of the Eternal Palace, you discover that the final encounter is taking place in the room that is essentially the giant lock that actually holds N'Zoth in place. It's got Titan technology, a Titan terminal... Titan pillars all over the place, and giant runes that essentially...
I just want to jump in really fast. If you've been to Alduar, it will look familiar.
Yes, it looks very much
similar
like Alduar.
In many ways.
And then, except it doesn't have a clear floor. But you've also seen these Titan runes in other places. I believe there was one that was actually in Sholazar Basin in one of the Titan Maker, the Terrace of the Makers... there was like a similar rune that was actually there. We've seen this stuff before. It's very clearly.
They've been all over the world.
Yeah. So
I mean, just this expansion, there's been one in, I can't remember, Zul'Dazar, I want to say.
Yes.
The big city. In fact, you see that get blown open by Zul.
And one in Underrod as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Now, the goal of this is obviously Ajara is trying to, at least in our minds, free her master. And so what winds up happening is she weakens these runes throughout the entirety of the fight, while draining the power from your heart of Azeroth to do so.
Basically, we brought the means to
unlock
with us
willingly. The power of a Titan to unlock Titan locks.
Yep.
And at the end of the fight, we win, quote unquote, because we beat her down, but the locks break, the chains shatter, and N'Zoth is free. And she basically looks at us saying, you don't know what you did. And then she gets pulled away, very much like Gul'dan being pulled away by Sargeras or Kil'jaeden or whoever it was that yanked him. I can't remember. I think it was Kil'jaeden.
I don't think Archimonde. Yeah, Archimonde. I don't think Archimonde grabbed him. I think Archimonde just straight up went yeet and threw him through a portal. But yeah, same thing.
Same essential thing where she gets pulled out.
I apologize for my use of the word yeet. I hope it was correct.
I don't.
Anyway.
I love yeet. And then you're left there with essentially nothing. You've defeated her, but there's no closure because you have no clue what just happened aside from we just helped unleash an old god, fully unleash an old god for the first time ever. Like, if you think about it, C'Thun, Yogg-Saron, they weren't fully released. They were somewhat free, but not completely free. They were still
reduced in mind. Keep in mind with these old gods, when we have quote unquote, I'm air quoting here, defeated the old gods. We didn't kill them. We defeated them. And when we defeated them, that piece that we were fighting, like that giant eyeball,
back in the box, basically.
That giant eyeball or the big, you know, giant Teeth ravenous maw, that was the tiniest portion of the actual old god.
Yep.
It was not that. That's not the whole old god. Yogg-Saron in particular, we have evidence of Yogg-Saron and his tendrils reaching all the way down to Horde side, starting place. No, not Horde side, Alliance side.
They go all the way to you know, the fjord.
Yep.
Howling Fjord, thank you. Fjord. Yeah.
And they actually go all the way across to, there's evidence of them going all the way across to Sholazar Basin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yogg-Saron is really big. C'Thun, just as big, if not bigger. Keep in mind that both of these guys, they were described as the stronger ones by Xalatath, and, you know, Xalatath could be
the best.
Us a load of hooey, but at the same time, they said that the tales in Chronicle say that Yashiraj was the largest, and then we hear that Nazoth is the weakest of the bunch, and he's gigantic. Anyway, go ahead, Joe. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, like, the size of them, if you look in the Chronicle, it was often believed that the extent of their empires was to be where their bodies fully reached, until it butted up against one of the other bodies of one of the old gods, essentially, because that's where their influence came from, and how they were able to bore all these, you know, wonderful, wonderful, fleshy, squelchy creatures.
Basically, if you took the top layer of crust off of the planet, you'd find a squiggling, horrific mass of tentacles and other assorted body parts and gross things.
Mm-hmm.
That's Azeroth. Welcome to the planet.
But that's where we are. We in our short-sightedness, yet again, as we do all the time, have unleashed an old god fully onto the world.
Okay, so here's the thing is, first off, let's go ahead and I have so many things I want to talk about here. But first up, let's talk about the fact that what happened in 8.2.5, the whole resolution of the Horde and Alliance War, the reason Anduin was so gung-ho about making that final stand and making it stick was because he knew what was coming. We all knew what was coming, and we also knew that with this whole Alliance and Horde war going on, there was no way we would be able to even consider handling what is coming. We fought old gods before. We fought Yogg-Saron. We fought C'Thun, but they were never unleashed. They were never fully unleashed in the way that we just did with Nazoth. So it's going to take some concerted effort to try and resolve this.
There's actually something unrelated to that, but that I do want to talk to people about when I'm talk about, so let me
sure.
know.
Well, the other thing I wanted to note is that I don't think that this was the final lock. I think we've been quietly releasing these not locks without realizing it for
exactly
a very, very long time, a very, very
that's
long time.
The lock that we unlock in Zoldazar, in Dazar'alor, that lock is one of the ones that was keeping him down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's why that whole thing with Zul was to get that lock out.
I thought that was for Gahun.
No.
It was for Gahun, but Gahun himself was part, like, the system is all based around each other.
Yeah.
Like, every time we've been doing, like, something along these, this is a continuous interlocking system.
It's a circle! It's a circle of stars!
Yeah, there's a, each of these installations we've been to has been part of the whole process of holding each of them. They weren't supposed to be held by just the one place they're in. Each place is supposed to be redundant and holding them all together. That's why it was set up with all these roads between them back before the cataclysm.
But if that's the case, then did we not? If that's the case, then since we released Nazoth, wouldn't the other two be released at this point too?
No, because we stopped those ones from being unlocked.
But then
they're interlocking, but they're not all interlocking at once. So basically, Nazoth managed to get us to let him out, but not to let them all out. Because again, look at where we are, and look at where, if you look at the places we've been to Kul Tiras and Zandalar this time, and the system in Zandalar. Gahun was never meant to be an old god in the first place. Gahun, that installation, Uldir, wasn't built for Gahun.
No, it was built for research.
It was built for research into the old gods. What old god were they studying? That's the question you need to ask. Why was Uldir so close to Zul'Dazar, to Dazar'alor? Why was it so close that when the Xandalar left Nazmir, because they were retreating, remember, they were retreating from the corruption in Uldir, they went to Dazar'alor, which was right there, right next to it. Just like Ankaraj is right next to Uldum. Now think about that. Think about what that means. And now think about the fact that when you go up to Northrend, Uldum is right next to where An-Katet would end up. And An-Katet is full of, you know, it's got all this Nerubian stuff, but it was also full of obsidian destroyers.
Yep.
So it was also a Titan facility. They built multiple facilities in each place. Sholazar, Titan facility. All these facilities are always bound close together. And each is supposed to be overly interlocking, but also each has interlocking in the area that they're in. So whatever they were doing, Ashara's Eternal Palace, the place where we go, the final chamber to hold Nazoth, is a third part, just like what we see in Uldum, just like what we see in Northrend.
I would like to interject here that, you know, maybe all of this could have been solved had the Titans actually used two-factor authentication.
But this kind of does feed into the next thing I wanted to point out, which was Ashara's actual plan.
My joke just fell flat there. I'm sorry.
It's all right. But Ashara's actual plan involved Zalatath. And it wasn't... Yeah. It was fascinating that, you know, Nazoth let Zalatath's spirit out of it as part of his plan, but Ashara was the one trying to get the knife back. And she wanted the knife to have the spirit in it, but even when it didn't, it's Ashara who arranged for Sylvanas to give her the knife.
That this was the deal that they made.
Yeah, this is all revealed in 8.3. And one of the things we find out is that what was going to happen if we hadn't shown up and attacked her, if we'd managed, like if she'd done better in the fight, basically, was that she was going to let him out using the power of the Heart of Azeroth, and then she was going to kill him with the knife.
Mm-hmm.
Because the knife is basically the only thing that can kill an old god, because it is an old god.
She wanted free from her contract that she had endured so long ago.
And that comes
Keep in mind that this wasn't like out of any altruistic reasons. This wasn't because she wanted to save Azeroth or anything like that. It was specifically because she's been stuck in that contract with an old god for how long now? And she wants out. She wants to do her own agenda. She doesn't want to feel like she's at all obligated to this old god creature thing. She would rather just shank him and then move on with her own plans, whatever those happen to be.
And that's the thing. Ashara is the perfect example of what we call enlightened self-interest, in that she wants to save Azeroth because she lives on Azeroth, not because she likes us, but because she can't rule the world if a giant squid monster is doing it.
Mm-hmm. But she can't remake the world in her own glorious visage if there's a bunch of unsightly tentacle beasts living just below the crust.
If we look at what's been going on in both Kul Tiras and Xandalar, that's a lot of it's been Ashara the whole time. And it was Ashara who was attacking Stormsong Valley. And that's where, you know, the whole thing with like the I forget their names, but the whole deal with the dagger and that cabal of Tide Priests was up there in Stormsong Valley. And that was all Ashara's doing. And that the knife, you know, the whole thing about getting Zalatath plays heavily into that area. It was always Ashara behind Zul. And Zul is the one that blew open the lock and invaded Uldir. And he was trying to get Gahoon because he thought Gahoon is a new god for his people. But Gahoon wasn't even an afterthought to Ashara. She didn't care about Gahoon. Gahoon calls itself an old god, but the old gods don't consider it one of them. It's a disease.
It's a genetically engineered old godish kind of thing.
It's the thing that the Titans were studying, and that's really important. But the old gods had a hierarchy here, and Gahoon wasn't in it because Gahoon didn't exist. Now, if it get loose, that certainly would have been very bad. We've seen what the blood trolls are like. Gahoon getting out would have been a nightmare. But in a way, by stopping Gahoon, we made things worse. Because every step along the way, this entire expansion has been one gigantic Xanatos gambit. Where every time we've done something, we've unleashed something else that's worse.
I would like to take a step backwards, because we're talking about the Xanatos gambit. And I would like to point out that we can go all the way back to Legion. We could go back further than Legion, but definitely with Legion. If we look at Legion and we look at Ashara's involvement in Legion, there was a reason why she wasn't involved with, like, fighting the Burning Legion directly. There was a reason why she was looking for the Tidestone, but she wasn't really doing anything else. And she wasn't interfering with what we were doing. Like, she didn't really care about what we were doing. She was quietly working on this. And she's been quietly working on this for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And I feel like every attack we've done, everything that we fought to date, all of the encounters with the old gods that we foiled or we thought we foiled, that kind of thing, it all leads back to breaking those chains one by one by one. And I want to go back to one of the... Man, what was it? It was like one of the first tinfoil hat articles. The first tinfoil hat article that I did was Aluna Zanaru. And then one of the later ones that I did, I talked about that interesting... This was prior to my working to WoW Insider. I had an article where I was talking about the correlations between the old gods and the dragonflights, and I had this really neat map that was like, it was a star, and I thought it was really cool, and a lot of things kind of made sense. And then over time, you know, as we got more continents released and as we got more information on various Titan facilities, that map changed, shifted, it altered, that kind of thing. And the very last article that I did for... WoW Insider, before we switched to Blizzard Watch, was a big long tinfoil hat about unraveling Azeroth, and I was looking at that map, and I had changed the map from having 5 points, like a 5-point star, to having 6 points, like a 6-point star. So, all of this stuff is coming out about 8.3, and I'm looking at all of this stuff about 8.3, and how we've, like, unleashed N'Zoth, all this other stuff, and I was walking down the hall. You guys would laugh at this, right? You would laugh at this if you had witnessed it in person. I was walking down the hall from my office to the kitchen, and I stopped halfway down, like full stop. And I went, it's not a map of stars. It's a circle of stars. And then I turned around and I walked back to my office because I had to alter my map. Because it's not about the individual star points. It's about the circle. Well, we've been fighting different points on that circle since C'Thun.
The weird thing to me is also regarding that, and I think I said this a while ago, whenever they said Circle of Stars, it always struck me that that happened to be how World Souls were presented in the game too.
Yeah.
Because if you look at when we went through the Maelstrom and cut through essentially into, what is it, Deepholm, you look up, there's a Circle of Stars in the middle, and it just happens to be the same one that looked like Argus's soul, and the same one that looked like the souls of the Titans when they were being tortured in Argus as well. So I always thought that drowning in a Circle of Stars meant trying to complete the infestation of Azeroth, or complete the infestation of a Titan soul.
I feel like every time anybody said the circle is nearly complete, that's the circle that they've been talking about. That's the circle. It's that circle that we've been inadvertently unlocking bit by bit over time with every Titan facility we've meddled with every old god we've air quote defeated, with everything that we've done. It's all contributed towards this moment. We just didn't know it. So it's not just a Xanatos gambit in terms of battle for Azeroth. I feel like it's a Xanatos gambit that's been going on the entire time we've been playing World of Warcraft, yeah, going all the way back to vanilla. Anyway, Rossi, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. So you keep going.
So unfortunately for you, I can't keep going because you just made me think of something else.
That's okay. Please spoil for us.
I was just thinking about the fact that the entire thing with the old gods started, according to Chronicle, when Cho'Gall came to our world and immediately got hit by just how much more, like, the old god presence was so strong that it wasn't like when he was on Draenor before it exploded. He could hear the void through the various Naru and stuff that were, like, in the presence of going to void, but it wasn't anything like on Azeroth. The void force was so much stronger that he went mad. Like, he went from being a calculating, somewhat, you know, a little nuts, but mostly a calculating evil force, to a lunatic, and started roaming around the world
and
looking
for...
And
that's when the second head started babbling, words, 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 yeah, and all that other stuff. The master wants murder.
That's when he started going from place to place, tampering with the bindings on the old gods. But you'll notice he tampered with the bindings on C'Thun, but he didn't release C'Thun. He just tampered with them. Then he went up to Northrend and he did the same thing with Yogg-Saron. He tampered with the bindings, but he didn't release them. We've always assumed, because based on the comic book and based on his connection to the area, that Cho'Gall's master was C'Thun.
Oh, no, I think, yeah, but I know where you're going with this. Yeah.
What if his master has been N'Zoth the whole time? Because N'Zoth was the one infesting the Emerald Dream.
N'Zoth was the one that was sleeping.
Yes. Also, wasn't N'Zoth also listed as the most devious of them, essentially?
Yes, he has always been so.
Smallest, but the most devious. So it makes sense.
So if you think back to what he did with the other old gods, he weakened their bindings so that they could become a threat, so that they could be dealt with. And when this happened, it's even said that N'Zoth did not see it as a threat, but as an opportunity, a window of opportunity that was closing. Why was it a window of opportunity that was closing? What was closing it? What was the thing that would prevent him from achieving his goals if he didn't act? Because that's the thing, when you say something is a window of opportunity that's closing, you're saying you have to do something now.
The hour of twilight.
Yeah. We've been talking about this whole thing as Xanathar's Gambit the whole time. What? Think about the kind of planning it would take to make Deathwing a sacrificable cat's paw. Deathwing.
And he faked the hour of twilight. He faked it. Or
maybe he didn't fake it so much as he used it as a back door. Because, yes, I'll lose this servant.
But it's chess.
I'm going to lose Cho'Gall, and that's terrible because Cho'Gall has been very useful to me. And then I'm going to lose Deathwing, which is even worse because Deathwing is titanically powerful. The thing is enormous, incredibly powerful. It's a great loss, but if I lose both of them in this way, what do my enemies lose? Dragonflights. They lose all the Dragonflights, for lack of a better word. They lose the power of the Dragonflights to oppose him. And in the meantime... both Yogg-Saron and C'Thun, who are more powerful than him, are locked back down.
Not just locked back down, but have expended power, expended influence.
Expended armies.
Their servants have been beaten down and removed. Like, they're removing their base. And like you just pointed out, it's a game of chess. It's these valuable pieces. What do I trade? What do I get for them?
And what does he keep?
N'Zoth isn't just trying to do the whole old god thing about corrupt the planet and whatnot. N'Zoth is trying to move up the promotional ladder and come out top dog.
And and think about this. When he does all that sacrifice, who do we see at the very beginning of Cataclysm? Who do we see as a force that then just stops doing anything during Cataclysm, during Deathwing's rampage? Who is up front, makes some moves, does some things, and then suddenly just stops?
Thrall?
Shara.
Shara
is in Darkshore.
Yep.
She directly challenges Malfurion. Yep. She talks to him.
She has a whole about it.
She even points him at Mount Hyjal, where Deathwing is.
Yeah, she flat out, basically what she says, he shows up to confront her, and she says, "Oh, good, I'm so glad you showed up here, because you've been distracted this whole time while everybody's been doing everything up in Hyjal. I did a very good job. Bye-bye."
Yes, and so she points him in the direction she wants him to go. She accomplishes N'Zoth's aims. She then goes and sends her minions into... Vashir, where they, you know, unleash all sorts of havoc and they mess with Neptilon and keep things all nice and chaotic. But she doesn't really care about Neptilon. Neptilon's not really that important. The important thing is to keep everything at a froth. And then she pulls the heck out. She doesn't get involved in any of this.
No, because she can't have a target on her back.
She's not there for that final confrontation. She's just gone.
Because she doesn't care about any of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it keeps us focused on the pieces that we do take out. Alakir, Ragnaros, Deathwing, Cho'Gall, they're all sacrificed, but none of them are the ones that N'Zoth made a bargain with. That one he keeps out, and she's free to keep doing things the whole time, right up to Legion, where she's attacking Azuna at the same time that, you know, the demons are. She goes in and gets the Tidestone eventually, because we're just not focused on it. We see the Tidestone as a means to stop the Legion, never thinking, well, a Tidestone would be awfully useful if you need Titan power to like help trigger a series of locks, wouldn't it? And she goes and gets it while we're busy, because we've now moved past it. We now have the portal in the sky. We've got Argus to deal with.
And she's like, yeah, yeah, they'll deal with Argus. And I think there's even a thing Rathian says, which we're probably going to have to move into soon. The thing where Rathian says, once the Alliance and Horde were fighting the Legion, I didn't worry about it anymore. Because the Legion is an army, and they can deal with armies. They've been able to fight armies this whole time. But the old
they
gods...
They fought each other, you know.
Yeah, the old gods are not an army. The old gods are a disease. And I think that's why Gahoon is going to be so important. Not because he was an old god that, you know, was going to rise and be... because Gahoon is the study vector.
Well, and then
Do you think that they were mucking around with Gahoon because they were trying to create an antibody, quote unquote?
Yes, I think they were, because Mother basically says as much. Like, when you're going through Aldir, and even afterwards, when you talk to her in the heart of Azeroth, the heart chamber, I mean, she basically flat out tells you that's what they were trying to do, and then things went sideways.
Mm.
They weren't trying to create an old god. They were trying to understand how to cure the disease, and it's similar to what what's his name in Mogoshan Vault says as well. God, Titan Watcher. What was his name? The Mogu.
Rodin.
Oh, I know. No, he means the other one. But Rodin.
The Thundercake.
Noroshen.
Yes. Noroshen says basically the same thing. When he's purging the Shah taint from you, it's as if he's removing a pathogen from you.
Yeah.
It's a surgical removal. And those two things are exceedingly similar. And there's no way that he would understand what that was if that wasn't what the Titans were essentially trying to do.
Because it's all interconnected, the research facilities. They're all just as interconnected as the old gods are.
Yep, and it's similar to what was happening in King's Rest. I recently just redid this one, the Mythic Dungeon.
Oh, God!
When they wouldn't touch the beast, and they needed to have mechanicals to do it because the pathogen would transfer. So in order to keep the contagion contained, they had essentially what were Titan mechanical creations. At least we know that they were, or based on that pattern, because during the questing on the Horde side, at least, I don't know about the Alliance side, but you discover that these were essentially Titan constructs that the trolls were using or were in service to the trolls, that they're using here to inter their dead, to clean the dead, to embalm the dead by removing the blood from the dead and making sure living creatures that are already succumbed to the curse of flesh that could be corrupted, aren't in contact with it anymore.
And if we go back to the Mogu, is the reason that the Mogu were so obsessed with the idea of flesh shaping and that kind
of
thing? The anima. Was it because they wanted to make themselves stronger, or was it because they were going back to their base programming, which was something that had to do with genetic manipulation?
Go back to the encounter inside of the dungeon, inside of the Throne of Thunder, where you start learning about this. There is literally a Titan facility where you fight a blood construct, not the Animus. I'm talking about the weird lizard-like creature that popped up.
Primordius,
and what is that room?
Yeah.
Primordius. What is that room?
It's the one that's right above Rodin's chamber.
Which is filled with what?
Blood.
And you look at the walls, and what are they filled with?
Runes.
Titan tech. And what would they be doing with that much blood in one area, but learning how to purify and then basically remove the pathogen so that they could use it for what they needed to do it for?
Okay,
That's why I said yesterday, Mogu have not nearly been investigated enough in this expansion and what they mean to it.
Fun story.
Well, for that matter, there's also the fact that the Mogi show up.
Yeah, I need to interject here because I need to go back to 8.3. Fun story. There are two places that are under attack, that are being attacked in 8.3, that N'Zoth is kind of breaking through and doing stuff, that kind of thing, and you have to go help. And one of them is Uldum, which is where the reorigination device is actually located. The other one is the Veil of Eternal Blossoms. And the Veil of Eternal Blossoms has been restored. It's fantastic. If you go there on the PTR, and I have, a lot of the quests that you are doing, you see Mogu. You see Mogu all over the place. Not only do you see Mogu, but you see those blood robot construct things that you saw in the Throne of Thunder. They're messing around with anima again, directly in the Veil.
Which makes sense, because all of this ties together. And I'll let Rossi go, because I think he had something he wanted to say.
Yeah, please do, Rossi.
When you do Aldir, one of the things you do is you meet a series of Titan keepers. One of them is a Titan Keeper named Hezreel. Hezreel is a Zandalar, but he is a Titan Keeper. He has a Titan Keeper that looks like a Zandalar troll. Mm-hmm. He's upright like a Zandalar troll. He doesn't have tusks, but his body type is pretty, including the fact that his feet are visible.
Like they made him out of the troll's image?
No. The trolls are Titan forged.
Ooh.
Are Titan forged.
Which
they
means
come
that night elves would be Titan. All of the elves would be Titan forged.
And
that
and,
means
which
that
is why they
were
still
is,
affected by the well.
Okay, the only thing that wouldn't be then at this point, because we always assume that trolls were one of the native races, but if trolls were Titan forged, then that means that Tauren are the only ones that aren't explained right now.
Right now.
But and everybody else can be traced back to the Titan Forged.
Well, technically, and here's
including
the, thing,
the orcs.
I think all, I don't know about the orcs, but I
no,
know.
Yes,
the orcs
can be traced can, back to the Titans. Because you go back to Draenor, and you go back to what Agrimmar was doing with the planet. They're a direct evolution of what Agrimmar was doing.
But I was going to say, all the races that are native to Azeroth, even the ones that, quote unquote, aren't Titan Forged, and I've been saying this for a while, even if the Titans didn't create them, if they were born from Azeroth in any capacity, they're still Titan Forged. They're still born.
Do we
by
think, here's the thing though, when we go back, when we go way, 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 way back with Tauren legends and things like that, and they're talking about the eyes of the Earth Mother and the left and the right eye and all of that, are they talking about the Earth Mother some kind of god, or are they talking about a Titan? Because how big are Titans? How big is a Titan? How big? No. Literally, how big is a Titan?
Yeah.
You look at what Amon-Thul did. They couldn't go onto the planet because
I was actually going to say Amon-Thul.
Yeah.
Like, if you
so
look
maybe
at the
Aenar actually is the Earth Mother, and when they describe the left and right eye of the Earth Mother, they're describing ancient times, long before the world was ordered or anything, when they looked up at the sky and they
and saw the
Aenar's face looking back down at them.
Well, I don't think just
Aenar. How weird would that be?
Well, I think you're on the right track there, and I think that if you look at, and this is going to sound weird, but look at the artwork of all of the Titans that we've had over the years, what is one of the key features that you see in them? It's bright, burning, glowing eyes in different colors.
And
that would be very easy to misinterpret as sun and moon.
But okay, that's all great, and I'm glad you guys went on that subject. That wasn't even where I was going.
I'm sorry, Rossi. We squirreled.
No.
Go for it.
This is going to get you even further then. Think about the fact that we know that the road that leads from the various Titan facilities in Nazmir would head across the water to Northrend.
Mm-hmm.
And on its way, it would cross the Broken Isles.
Mm-hmm. And Zandalar.
Which is where the Temple of Ilun was.
Yep.
Temple of Ilun, which had the four places inside of it for the four pillars of creation. And the artwork in the Temple of Ilun is night elves. It's night elves on all the
and the artwork
and so forth.
The artwork in the base room of Ulduar
includes
elves.
A night elf and a troll. There's night elves and there's trolls in there, and there's a Tauren in there too, by the way.
Yes, there is.
God.
Not a Yaugal,
but let me put this one to you though. Thinking about this, we know that the night elves became night elves when they were exposed to the waters of the Well of Ilun.
The
we
Well of Eternity.
Species,
Yeah,
the Well of Eternity. We know the other species, like, say, the ones from Pandaria, the fish people.
The Jinyu.
The Jinyu.
And even the Grummels, also. In a way. No, wait, the Grummels were part of genetic, no?
Yeah, the Mogul
Grummels were too.
The Mogul crafted the Grummels, but the Grummels came from Trogs, who were a devolution
exposed
of,
to the Well Titan of Eternity forged. Waters, which is basically what's floating around in the Vale of Eternal Blossoms.
But to get back to where I'm going with this, we always think of Night Elves. The Night Elves have always said that they were made in the image of Ilun.
Mm-hmm.
And what if they are literally right?
Well, look at the planet Aenar is on, right?
Yeah, Ilunias. Yeah, I'm thinking though about
maybe Ilun is a Titan.
Maybe. Ilun
that we don't know
Titan.
About?
No, maybe Ilun is the Titan that we're standing on.
Yep.
Because that's the thing. We don't know much about Ilun, but we've often been said that the sun and the moon are her eyes.
Well, also look at, going that step further, with the old tales that we talked about way, way long ago, when they used to say that a loon would rise from the well of eternity and then also go back into it.
If Azeroth is a loon, no wonder she granted. Oh God, no wonder she stopped talking to the Night Owls, because she wasn't. And
she wasn't capable of doing.
No, and no wonder she granted Tyrande this power. Of course she would do that. Of course she would do that now. She's hurt. She needs her defenders.
Mm-hmm. And more importantly, when they blew up Kalimdor off of the surface of her, they possibly knocked her into an insensate state. If Ilun is Azeroth, if the planet, because here's the thing, we know that the Emerald Dream is extremely important in all this. The Emerald Dream is often said to be essentially the unconsciousness of the world, and it's extremely important to the Night Elves, and it's extremely important to Ysera.
And it was extremely important to N'Zoth.
Yeah, and Ysera had a deep connection with the Night Elves and their spirituality, yet it was Ysera who smote a blood god.
Yeah.
In a temple full mm-hmm. of trolls.
Mm-hmm.
Why did Ysera do that? Why were the Emerald Dragonflight the ones that attacked to keep Akkar out? What's Akkar's relationship to Gahun? Why are they both blood gods? And it was Akkar that the blood trolls were following when they first, you know, if you go back and do the archaeology stuff, the first time that, you know, the blood trolls were heard of, it was Akkar, not mm-hmm. Gahun.
Mm-hmm. When you go back, when you go way, 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 way back, and you look at, obviously, when trolls became druids, they referred to the Loa, they referred to the ancient the wild gods as Loa. Like, mm-hmm. all of the wild gods are Loa. The way that the wild gods have been, they are under that umbrella. And the way that the wild gods have been defined is that they were born of the planet. They weren't created by the Titans. They were born of the planet, and they were these incredibly powerful beings. So what if the blood gods were the result of some kind of infection, and because the dragonflights were empowered with keeping all of that on the up and up, the green dragonflight was trying to purge that infection before anything happened.
I think it's even a step beyond that too, because if you remember way back when, before
I've got more to drop on you two when you're done. So
I was gonna say when Hakkar, Jamalan the prophet was injecting injecting the blood of Hakkar into green dragons in order to produce more blood.
And it created old god corruption.
It did. I was just going to say that.
Yep. You and I are going in the same direction. Yep. I think so.
Keep going, Rusty.
The next piece, then. There are at least two sacred mountains that we know of for the ancient trolls. Hyjal, where the dark trolls live.
And the Zandalar Mountain, right?
And Zandalar Mountain itself. Both Zandalar Mountain, we now know, is absolutely infested with Titan bases.
Oh, yeah.
Was there a third up in Northrend, though?
That's one possibility, but think about this one just for now. Keep this one going. Is there any, do you know of any Titan bases on Hyjal or around it?
Not yet.
But when you do go to Hyjal, what happens in the middle of the place? What does the Fire Lord immediately erect? A huge base.
Well, here's the funny part, though, Rossi. Here's the super funny part. When we go back to that whole map of stars thing, one of the mm-hmm. stars I put on Hyjal, and the reason that I put it on Hyjal was because if you go into Ashenvale, there's old god tentacles all over the place. The corruption is evident there, but it's not mm-hmm. C'Thun. It could be something else. And when we were talking about, oh my God, okay, so you go back to Mother, right? And Mother says that there's an undiscovered Titan facility and we shouldn't go to it. I posted on Twitter like about a week ago. I said, I'm putting my money down now. It's under Hyjal.
And that would mean what, though? What does that mean exactly? Now think about what you guys were just talking about with blood. And where the blood infection comes from and what it is. We know that the old gods are considered necrophagic symbiotic parasites. Mm-hmm. They eat life and light, and they transform it into decay.
Which
they
means that Nordrassil is in trouble.
Yep. Oh, yeah, we know that.
But more than that, even. We have the trolls and the Night Elves now come into the family of Titanforge races created for a purpose. The Night Elves were obviously working. Their purpose seemed to have been to keep the Emerald Dream. hence the whole thing with the dragon flights.
They were keeping the tree safe because the tree was a filtration device.
But this ties in directly with an 8.3 thing as well. Just taking it back a couple seconds, because where is Tyrande heading?
Mm-hmm.
She's heading to Nordrassil. Why would she be heading to Nordrassil?
Because it is the last place for her people to go.
Yeah.
But also, she's currently operating on a slightly different frequency than she used to. She's plugged into a different part of the world.
Because you would think that if she's this agent of pure and unadulterated vengeance, she'd be heading for wherever the Banshee Queen is. She wouldn't be heading to a specific location just for her people. That's there's got to be something else. And like you said, she's on a different wavelength. Different things are getting downloaded into her brain.
But now think about this much, since we've been talking about the blood and the Mogu and other Titan Forged and all that stuff. And we've been talking about how does this relate to what's going on in 8.3? Well, we know that the old god attacks two places.
Yeah.
One of them you already pointed out, the Shrine of Eternal Blossoms. Other is Uldum.
Mm-hmm.
And what's in Uldum?
The reset switch.
Yes. Uldum is where, remember there were two places on Azeroth. There was one place up north in Northrend.
That's where the signal is sent.
The observer would come down, he would run his tests, and he would diagnose the world. And the second part was down in Uldum. And during the Cataclysm, what is the first thing Deathwing tried to do? He tried to get to the hall.
He tried to possess that he wanted, Nizoth wanted that circuit.
As a result of him, he was even turning off the curse of flesh. He was turning things back to Titan so that they would serve him and be immune to the stuff going on, which you only get that from an old god. So he was getting that directly from Nizoth. Nizoth was showing him how to turn it off.
So were we in the right or in the wrong when we turned off that switch in the Halls of Origination?
We were temporarily in the right, because had they gotten it, it would have been game over.
I also still maintain, and we said this a long, long, long time ago, and Rossi and I, this is one of the first things we ever agreed on. I think if you start thinking of the old gods as that infection, reorigination at any capacity is dangerous, because if it doesn't scour that infection, if it doesn't have the ability to scour that infection, or becomes corrupted in a way that the infection just gets laced into the genetic core of the planet at that point.
Would it even work right now? Because the thing is that that reorigination device was implemented how many thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago? And what's the thing about viruses and things like that? They adapt. They learn how to adapt.
But even
what
beyond
the old
that,
gods
what's
been
their
doing
point?
All this time?
But hold on, what's
okay, wait, say, let Rossi finish.
Here's the thing, you're both on a good track here, because here's the thing. We know what the reorigination device does, because all we have to do is look at Uldum and Silithus and Teneris, and we see what the reorigination device does. Because
it
the whole reason
it.
Those are deserts is because the reorigination device made them deserts. It stripped all the life force out. And who survived that just fine?
The Tolvir.
Y'all gods.
C'thun.
Yep.
C'thun.
Who was
right
there. They are securely locked. They are securely locked in Titan bases with Titan prisons. And currently, both C'thun and Yogg-Saron are still in those things.
They're snugly safe.
And even if you talk about the other aspects of it, I still have in my bags the remnant of the void, which is picked up from where?
The Emerald Dream.
Which was jacked how long ago and messed up and messed with and still has remnants
of
void.
Thanks, Vandral Staghelm.
For how long? Now, if you talk about a planet-wide reorigination, where is even the reset point? If the reset point's supposed to be the Emerald Dream, like we've been told it was, they can't even go back to that. It's too late. You can't even go. Even as a druid, there's still corruption there.
If you reoriginated the world right now using the Halls of Origination, you would basically be rewriting the world back to its backup copy. Its backup copy has an old god squatting in the middle of it.
Yeah,
it's corrupt. It's been corrupted. I talked about this years and years and years and years ago when I was talking about the Emerald Dream. I'm like, the Emerald Dream is a backup copy, but that backup copy has been corrupted.
And all of this ties into what Nizoth is doing right now.
It's been corrupted by Nizoth.
Now, hold on. Now, here's another question. This one, I think, would be for Rossi more than anybody, because I think out of all of us, you have the most love for these items. Do you think that maybe there is even a further backup copy and that it happens to be one of those discs that have disappeared?
Oh, the Dissonant Ganon type stuff, you mean?
Yeah, because we've, over the years, we've known that we don't have a complete collection of them. We don't know where all of them are.
Well, no, the ones that we have, the Dissonant Ganon that we have in Ulduman were originally from Northrend.
Sure.
And they're the ones that Loken had. So we absolutely can't trust those.
But we all, and we also know that several of them were in the Legion's hands for a long time because of the Nathrezim. The Nathrezim had a set of discs as well. We don't know where they got them from.
But they got those
discs. And there's that big honking disc in Zoldazar in Dazar'alor.
Yeah, that disc actually we see get wiped out.
Yeah.
And so there's actually an interesting question here about all of that stuff. Do any of the discs contain Titan knowledge? Can we have a, do we have a backup of Azeroth from any of them? But more to that, even think about the fact that every time we've seen a Titan storage thing, like the one we see in the Halls of Lightning and Halls of Stone, it's been edited at this point.
Every single one of them.
The one that was up there, Loken edited it. And we know that Loken was being affected by Yogg-Saron.
Oh, geez.
And the one person I think we could probably even tap for any sort of like intimate knowledge of it is now in a Titan prison as a jailer.
Yep.
Because Illidan, for all of his faults, knew about this stuff.
But also think about this. The one that got taken down to Ulduman is the reason we knew where Uldum was.
Yep.
I have a question. What exactly do you think Rathian saw when he ate the heart of Leishen?
He would have seen what was imparted to Raden by Amenthul.
Do you think Rathian has somewhere in his little dragon noggin that's not quite developed yet, maybe, but getting closer due to his model change, which, by the way, I approve. Do you think he has a backup somewhere kicking around in there?
Nizoth
is hunting him down.
I have a theory about that, about what you're going with, and that's why I think 8.3 with what happens with Rathian is so important.
Okay. We gave the spoiler warning anyway, so let's go ahead and go on with the spoiler. Talk about it, Joe.
I think of all of the options or all of the choices for uncorruptible data regarding the Titans, the Heart of Leishen has the most likely chance of it, simply because what were the Mogu doing? And we talked about this earlier this episode, looking at purging infection and maintaining. And if anybody, any of the races, any of the current players are capable of that right now, I think it was the Mogu, which is also why I think they were present in Zoldazar, not because of any sort of loyalty to Zol. I don't think they cared about Zol at all. What they wanted was more data. They wanted to verify the processes.
They had some base programming deeply ingrained in there that they are still working with.
Yes.
Rossi and I, when Mists of Pandaria first came out, and Rossi, you remember that conversation. It was probably like one of the first late night conversations that we had when we were talking about the Mogu and we were talking about the Veil of Eternal Blossoms. And we came to the conclusion that the Mogu had to be Titan creations, like they had to be.
Yeah, before it even came out, we were doing this in the beta.
Yeah,
when we looked at them and said they were Titan creations, there's no way they're not. And it was turned out they were.
Yeah, and it turned out that they were, despite anybody saying that they weren't. It turned out that they were, and both Rossi and I, we knew it. We knew it like from the onset. But at the same time, when we were talking about it, we were talking about the fact that maybe it's not that these guys are evil necessarily. Maybe it's just that they are working on base programming that, to the outside observer, to somebody who has been affected by the curse of flesh, to somebody that has developed free will the way that we have, the way that Algolon says is so extraordinary and unlike anywhere else, right?
Well, and
to us, it looks horrible. It looks horrific. It looks like these guys are monsters. It looks like these guys are dictators, that kind of thing. They enslave the Pandaren. But when you go back and you look at it purely from something that's a computer trying to do its programming, it's just forcing the routine to work in the way that it was told it needed to work.
Yeah, if the Titan mechanism is told to use these pieces to do its job, it's going to do these pieces to use its job. There's no morality involved in it. But what I was going to say, there's a little one more, thing, but go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I'll let you go.
But I think this is why Rathian's being hunted, but I also think this is why the Ebonhorn stuff happened. Not because Nazoth was looking for Ebonhorn specifically. I don't think that was the vector any longer.
I think he was trying to get Rathian out of hiding.
Exactly, because if you go through those quests, Rathian says flat out, I can't be seen. I have other things that need to be done.
Why do you think
because he knew that that's what Nazarov wanted.
Why do you think Deathwing arrived personally to destroy Rathion's egg?
Because this was going to happen.
It was Nazarov.
It was Nazarov, exactly. Which is why I think in 8.3, it is so earth-shattering when you start going into Nyalatha and you find out Nazarov got his tentacles inside of Rathion.
Okay.
Because he accomplished his goal.
I was initially... Well, here's the thing. I was initially really upset about this because Rathion is one of those characters that I think has been tremendously underutilized. And along the same lines as, you know, I always go back and I talk about Fandral Staghelm and how he was capable. Like, he had so much potential and then they just made him a raid boss. And then I saw what happened to Rathion in 8.3, and I was about to just completely lose it. But if you go farther into the adventure journal, the second to last boss, Rathion arrives during that encounter and helps you. So it turns out we don't kill him. So I'm very happy about this. And if anybody was wondering, but and again, we gave the spoiler warning at the beginning of the show. So, like, we're going to do that. Rossi, I don't think we're going to get to this other thing that you wanted to talk about. I think we're going to have to do it next week. But let's
keep going. Just let me drop this on you.
Yeah,
let me
keep
drop
going.
This on you real fast.
Keep going.
The of the facilities, we don't know where they are. One of them is called Uldorus.
Yep.
And Uld seems to be the Azeroth prefix for Titan facilities.
Uldorus sounds like Antorus, only...
Yep. Yeah.
And
Rossi's brought this up a couple times.
Who do the Mogu look a lot like? And who had a ancient crystal that predated their 25,000-year-old society, which was 25,000 years ago, by the way, that
the Draenei, could summon the Eredar.
The Eredar, yeah. Mm-hmm. And the Eredar from where? And what world had a Titan, you know, a Titan spirit inside of it, a world soul?
Argus.
That we recently fought? And destroyed, apparently, and we don't know exactly what happened there, but one drop of its blood was brought back to Azeroth.
Mm-hmm.
And how does that connect to something called the Argus Wake that we were talking about last mm-hmm. week?
With the bloodstones and the...
Yeah, yeah. So I just wanted to put that there for you guys, and the blood, and the bloodstones, the Argus Wake, and the blood of Argus, and the Draenei, and the Eredar, and all that, and the Legion, and everything there. Just to think about in relation to everything we just talked about before we landed the show. Because I think you're gonna see where I'm going with this. I think you guys have pulled out a lot of it. And I think this is really going somewhere interesting in the future. And it does involve the fact that there are a lot more Titan Forged than we think. That the
I agree.
Trolls and Night Elves are absolutely Titan Forged.
Now
I also think
go ahead.
I was going to say, this also makes me start questioning ethereals as well.
Oh, yeah.
Because I still maintain that I think we're going to wind up in Koresh at some point, and I think it's going to be all this is leading us to that point at some in the near future.
Because Koresh is the world that the Void got a hold of.
And we've seen it. We saw it last expansion in the Astromancer's room. During mm-hmm. the encounter, you literally see it writhing with Void tentacles.
Okay, was that Koresh, or was that a potential future of Azeroth?
That according to the fight, and if you take it at face value,
mm-hmm.
you're looking at the universe as it is, not okay. as it's going to be.
Okay.
So
all right.
We never had confirmation, but I've got a few likes when I said from some key people that when I said this has got to be Koresh.
Yeah. So it's never been confirmed either way, but it's entirely possible that that was Koresh.
Mm-hmm.
So,
we didn't get to talk about half of 8.3
no,
either.
No, we got way more to talk about. We've got way more to talk about. But here's the thing. I kind of want to touch on a little bit of data mined information, and we're not going to go too far into it. We're not going to go too far into it because we're going to save that for next week because there's some big stuff that was data mined, isn't necessarily being talked about as being part of 8.3, but oh boy, guys, is it ever a doozy of stuff. I'm going to go to this conversation between Antwood and Jaina, and I'm not going to talk about the extent of the conversation. I'm just going to talk about the beginning of the conversation. Jaina starts a conversation by saying, "The old god has been vanquished. The Alliance and Horde have ended hostilities." So in theory, in 8.3, we're dealing with Nazarov in a way that's final. But given everything that we've just discussed, do you think it's going to be final? Or do you think, I mean, there's a lot here and there's too much here for a single patch. You know what I mean? And if we deal with N'Zoth, where does that leave C'Thun and Yogg-Saron? Because they're still imprisoned.
I'm wondering if the ultimate goal, like just going back from Chronicle and everything else, I'm wondering if the ultimate goal of N'Zoth is to consume those two.
I don't know. You got any theories on that, Rossi?
Oh, yeah, but we don't really have time for the full thing. So
give me the shortened version, because we've got like another few minutes here. Give me the shortened version.
Yashiraj isn't dead because they can't die.
I think he just got a piece pulled out of him.
Mm-hmm. More importantly, I think his state changed. There's always been a weird thing about the Shadowlands. What are the Shadowlands? Why did we get the Shadowlands? Are they just, were they always there? Are they a reflection of the Emerald Dream? Were they something that the Titans created? Or did they get made at some point? And what did they get made for? And why
maybe
are they
the Titans
there?
Did create them. Maybe Amon Thul created them when he
ripped Yashiraj in half. Yeah. And the thing about that is, we've been dealing all this time with all these death figures, and they're all, none of them are responsible for what's going on, but all of them are involved. And there's this, yeah. I think the Drust are going to come back at some point. I think Drustvar and Throst are going to come back.
Do you think the Shaab were manifestations of our negative energy, which obviously they were though, but those manifestations, did they just pop out of nowhere or did they pop out of the Shadowlands?
I think that's something that might come up, especially since, where the fact that N'Zoth attacks the Vale of Eternal Blossoms.
Yeah.
Which is where the Shaa were kept locked up.
Mm-hmm.
And the Shaa pride.
The Shaa corruption was purged.
Yeah. There's more coming. I don't think N'Zoth's plan is to win here.
When I was looking at the first thing that I looked at, and I posted this again, I posted this stuff on Twitter just because I was kind of like kicking it around. I don't know if you guys saw it or not, but the first thing that I pointed out was when you look at the map of Azeroth on the 8.3 PTR, there's little eye markers, demarcations for where those attacks are going on. And they line up with my star map.
Yep.
They line up with 2 points on that star map, at which point I was like, so we've got 2 of 6 unlocked right now. 2 of 6. And one of them is completely undiscovered because it's under Hyjal. And then later on, that's when I went, it's a circle. It's a circle of stars. Because it's not about one point or another point on that map. It's about the circle as a whole. And we've been meddling with pretty much every point on that map since World of Warcraft began, including Hyjal. Because look at the Third War. What did the Third War do? We destroyed Nordrassil. It's been growing back. Yes, it has been growing back. But what did we do in Cataclysm? We had another giant conflict up on Hyjal. We're not done with Hyjal yet. Tyrande's headed there. So, yeah. I am very curious what Tyrande is up to. I am very curious how it ties to what Mother was talking. Not Mother. Mother. No, Mother said it. The other one was listing off facilities and like broke in the middle of listing off. Remember the facilities that we didn't know the names. She was talking about like names of facilities that we didn't know yet. And we're like, huh. And then Mother makes that comment where she says, there is another Titan facility out there. Recommend don't go anywhere near it.
Maiden of Vitality, by the way.
Yeah, Maiden of Vitality. But the mother was the one that was talking about it. She was like, there's another Titan facility, recommend do not approach, do not go near it. Is that where Tyrande is headed? We're not done. We're not gonna be done in 8.3. There's no way.
Oh no, we got so many weeks of this.
No, I mean there's no way we're gonna be done with all of this. We're not done with when 8.3 comes out and we finish 8.3 and everything, we're gonna feel very accomplished, but we aren't gonna we're scratching the surface.
Well,
I think. I feel like
because ultimately even
and
if
we'll
the
feel
old
really good.
Done,
we'll feel really, really good when we vanquish Nizat. We'll be like, yeah, we got that guy. But the thing is like that's the smallest part of the problem here, I think. Honestly.
I think no matter what we do, I think that we'll defeat, quote unquote, defeat the old god menace. But then there's so much more at play here, so much more that we don't understand that we're still going to have to deal with, including ultimately, who does Sylvanas serve?
And we are about to get a taste of that too at some point here due to data mined information. However, we're out of time this week. We didn't get anywhere near. You know what, guys, though? I don't care, because the conversation that we were having, yeah, no, that was, this is why I love doing this show, you guys. I love these conversations where we just squirrel all over each other, and then all of a sudden, wait. Anyway, we're out of time this week. So next week, we're going to keep talking about 8.3 stuff, including some stuff that was data mined that points to maybe an interesting future, and maybe we'll see more about that at BlizzCon. We don't know. But yeah, Blizzard Watch. It's made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch, and your continued support means that this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow, including, you know, going from a bi-weekly podcast to a weekly podcast. Thank you for those of you who helped contribute and make that happen. Blizzard Watch supporters, they also enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience. And for you guys, the listeners of Blizzard Watch, Audible's offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. I know we didn't talk about any novels in particular this time around, but I feel like one of the ones that maybe kind of ties into this and would be helpful as far as like beginning to understand what's going on and kind of ties in a little bit with what we were talking about is the novel Storm Rage by Richard Knack. That one covers the Nightmare War. We didn't actually see it happen in game. We just all of a sudden we went from Malfurion being asleep to Malfurion woken up and doing things in Cataclysm. So the book covers that material, but it also covers a little bit of the history behind Teldrassil and what exactly was going on with that tree. And I feel like there are some very telling moments in terms of Nordrassil's creation and how it came to be that kind of reflect on what's going on today. So yeah, if you're interested in checking out that book, you can download that as your free audiobook, or you can download any of Blizzard's other titles that are there, or there are literally thousands of other books to choose from. It doesn't have to be a Blizzard title at all, but you can sign up at blizzardwatch.com/audible, and every sign up helps support the show and everything that we do. Okay, guys, final thoughts. I'm going to shoot you a question, and it's a very quick question because we're already over time. Do you think we're going to see Sylvanas in 8.3? Joe?
No.
Or Rossi? No?
I'm just saying no now.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think we're not going to get Sylvanas resolution. We're not going to see her. She is off doing whatever she needs to do, and I think it's going to lead into whatever's coming next.
Follow up to that. Do you think we're going to see Nathanos in 8.3?
Yes, because she gives him a task and we don't know what it is, but that I think we'll get something with.
Maybe, yeah.
Okay. I think that particular branch of the story, 8.2.5, kind of put a pin in that. And it actually put a pretty good pin in it, because things got resolved to a point where that part, that particular aspect that was giving us issues, is out of the picture temporarily. But it is going to come back and bite us. I don't think it's going to bite us in 8.3, though. I think Sylvanas has her own things going on. The big thing that I want to know is Sylvanas made a deal with Ashara, right? Gave Ashara the dagger.
Yes.
What did Sylvanas get out of that? And
the freedom
freedom
to do what she needed to do.
Yeah, and I feel like that's a bigger question than just, oh, well, you know, obviously Ashara did her a solid and tried to sink the Alliance fleet. No, I think that there's more to it than that. And I don't think we've scratched the surface of that. But that's another subject for another day. And otherwise, we could be going for like another 3 hours. And I got things to do today, guys. I'm really sorry. Anyway, thank you guys, as always, so much for listening. And we will see you again next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock, because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, parental controls, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.